Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 19 of the Let's Talk Yoga podcast. I can hardly believe that it's December. It seems like the end of 2020 is finally here. And I'm busy wrapping up my 200-hour yoga teacher training and setting the stage for my live virtual 300-hour that comes in 2021. We'll be starting in April of 2021, and this will be a training that's done in modules, and you can take it from anywhere in the world. So if you are interested in doing this online training, then just keep your ears peeled for details in the coming weeks and months ahead. My guest today on the podcast is Sunita Bhaste Patil. She's a lifelong yoga student, teacher, writer, and coach. She teaches yoga, Ayurveda, and meditation techniques and has over 20 years of teaching experience. She currently lives in Australia, and she was kind enough to sit down with me to talk about the sound of Om, Sanskrit language, as well as mantra and meditation in today's episode. She's known for her deep understanding of Sanskrit language. And she, in fact, teaches it to other teachers. And I thought she would be the perfect guest to talk about these topics. We discuss the sound of Om, the significance, the correct pronunciation, the origins of Om, and so much more just about Om. The first half of this podcast, you will hear us talk about the sound of Om and its role in a modern day yoga class. And then we jump into talking about Sanskrit language, the correct pronunciation, the origins of Sanskrit, and just, is Sanskrit a dying language? Because I've heard that several times. And lastly, we finish off talking about the difference between mantra, japa, kirtan. Where does one begin? When is one better than the other? And where should a beginner start? So it's a really fun conversation. And Sunita has so much knowledge and wisdom that she shares with us in today's episode. So I really hope you enjoy this one. And before I let you go, as always, please remember to rate and review the Let's Talk Yoga podcast. It always means the world when you do so. But for now, enjoy today's episode, and I'll see you on the other side. Hi, my name is Arundhati, and you're listening to the Let's Talk Yoga podcast. I'm an ex-Bollywood dancer turned yoga and wellness educator. I've built a six-figure business as an immigrant, woman of color yoga teacher with no business background, no handstands, pure instinct, and the free information found on Google. If you love doing yoga and you dream of teaching it someday, this podcast is for you. We go over everything from doing and teaching yoga to scaling a small business, living a modern yoga lifestyle, and so much more. You'll find interesting, fun, raw conversations along with some tips, tricks, strategies, and insights in this podcast. So grab your cup of chai and let's jump in. Hi, Sunita. Welcome to the Let's Talk Yoga podcast.
Hello, Arundhati. Thank you for inviting me. Really appreciate that.
I'm so excited that I discovered you rather recently. We've been friends on, well, not friends, but we've known each other on Instagram. And I recently discovered your work through my friend Cora. But before we dive into today's conversation, I'd love for the listeners to know a little more about you. You've got over two decades of teaching yoga and Ayurveda experience, but can you share how yoga became such an integral part of your life with the listeners?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I am originally from India, and yoga was always there in my family. I would say that almost there was no escape in a way, because every aspect of the life, yoga was present, you know, in the form of bhakti yoga, in the form of mantra chanting, in the form of yamas and niyamas, how to live your life. And so it was constantly there. And then on top of that, I have a very curious mind. So I've started to ask questions like, why this work? Why is it like this? And then my grandmother was my first guru. She used to tell us stories. She used to explain to us in a story format this whole philosophy of yoga. She started to encourage me to read books, and the books were in Sanskrit. So obviously, understanding the source, I had to kind of like work on my Sanskrit first and then read these books. And it really helped me to dive deep into wisdom of yoga. And that's how it started. Once it started, I just couldn't stop. I was very drawn to it from the beginning. I didn't understand initially why I was so much drawn to it. But over the period of time, I had done like my master's in computers, and I have worked in corporate world, and I tried to adjust in the corporate world, but I always constantly have this pull towards yoga. So one day I decided that corporate world is not for me. So I moved from that towards completely devoting my life to yoga. And over the period of time, Ayurveda came in my path, and I accepted that also. And I'm in Sydney, Australia. I teach all aspects of yoga, yoga philosophy. I teach corporate yoga, meditation. I run meditation teacher trainings, yoga teacher trainings. I also help teaching yoga therapy programs. So yeah, it's been a part of my life forever. And I have been on this path for many years now. I believe that yoga is my dharma. It's my way of living. And so it is in every aspect of my life. And I truly believe that this was the purpose of my life, and that's what I'm doing at the moment. So I do something called yoga chikitsa, which means yoga and Ayurveda combined together. I help people to work with their moving towards their optimal health with yoga and Ayurveda combined together. So everything about yoga and Ayurveda, I'm here.
Wonderful. It's really so heartwarming to hear when you say this is your dharma and you are living your dharma. That's so powerful, and it means a lot to me, because I feel like living yoga, teaching yoga, it's also a part of my dharma and my purpose in life. So I resonate with that deeply. When I was reading your bio and I was on your website, Sunita, I was like, oh, I can ask her about this and I can talk to her about that. And I'm like, okay, hold on. We only have a limited amount of time to go over. So I'm just going to go straight to my first question, if you don't mind. So one of the things I want to unpack with you today is the sound of Om. And I was wondering if you would share with us, what is Om and what is its significance?
So the Om is called the pranava, or the mantra. There are three sounds in this, A-U-M. So the Om is, it's believed that it is a sound of beginning, a sound of origin, or from this sound whole universe is created. So let me give you a little bit background behind that, why this thought process came into the process is because yoga and Ayurveda is based into Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya philosophy talks about there was a big bang, and through this, the universe is created through this big bang. And we also hear that from the scientists also, that, you know, there was a big bang. There is one theory called Big Bang Theory. So similar to that, Sankhya philosophy talks about that. And also they go a little bit further and they say that this bang had a sound, and this sound was Om. And this Om sound, that's why it's the sound of our beginning, of universe's beginning. And that's why it is most important mantra. It is also very powerful mantra. So this mantra is considered mantra of renouncing. What does that mean is that if you are on the path of renouncing, then you can chant just the mantra Om, but always use Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti 3 times. And there is reason for that. And this reason for this is basically we want the energy to rise, but the Kundalini to rise, but it has to be done gently. So Om Shanti Shanti should be chanted, or at least if you're chanting Om, say 108 times or 3 times or 5 times, depending on how much time you have, always end it with Shanti Shanti Shanti. But this is, remember, this is a mantra of renouncing. So to soften the mantra, then you use, you add other bija mantras into it, or you can add deities into it, you know, and that's why you will see that Om mantra is there into every other mantra, because it's such a powerful mantra. So if you are a householder, I would suggest at least have your deity of your choice with the Om mantra. And if you do not believe in deities or that's not your thing, then at least chant Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti at the end of the mantra. This is the very powerful. It is called Pranava. Pranava means it's the mantra which is a mantra of creation, which is the mantra of our being. And that's why we all resonate with it very quickly, because it is sound of our creation, you know, of universe's creation and our creation as well. So that's why we can connect with it very well. Does that answer your question?
It does. And it brings up 2 other questions from something you mentioned. One is, part one of that question is, can you clarify what is a bija mantra? And part 2 of that question is, you spoke about the syllables of Om, the U, and Ma. Do these syllables have, or do these sounds have a significance?
Yes, the mantra. So the first question was
bija mantra.
Sorry, bija mantra. So the bija mantra means the mantras are the, so there are 4 different types of mantra. Bija mantra is the mantra which is seed, which is not necessarily have any deities attached to it. You can attach deities to it, but these are the mantras which are seed mantras. All Sanskrit alphabets are bija mantras. They're very powerful mantras. Then the second mantra is divine masculine mantra, divine feminine mantra, where you can take a divine masculine deity like Om Namah Shivaya, or divine feminine mantra, which is Om Lakshmiye Namaha. All these are, and then the 4th one is you actually combine all this, which is divine masculine and feminine. So Om Namo Narayana Namaha, Om Namo Lakshmi Narayana Namaha is the mantra of divine masculine and feminine. So these types of 4 types of mantra exist, and these mantras, out of all these, though, the Om is the most powerful mantra, the more, because it is mantra of our origin, it is of the origin of the universe.
Okay. And what about the 3 syllables, Sunita, the A, U, and Ma? Does each syllable have its own meaning and purpose?
Yes. The mantra sounds, there is the reason why this, because it creates our breath is used in certain way. You can chant Om mantra in many formats. There are almost what you want to do with the practice. For example, if you chant Om in certain way, you can actually reduce your anxiety, depression. You can energize your system if you chant in certain ways. So there are ways you can use the mantras as almost like correcting our energy in our system using the breath right. So a lot of time what happens that a lot of our illnesses comes from not breathing correctly. And then when we don't breathe correctly, our psyche almost changes, because what happens that our breath and our mind is very much connected. And yogis knew this. And so they understood, also they understood that the origin of universe comes from the sound. So they combine all this wisdom, the sound, the breath, and they use these mantras to correct the energy channels, or I should say not correct, the remove the blockages from our energy channels. So chanting these mantras, the sound A-U-M is at different places in the alphabets of Sanskrit. And so when we pick them up in certain way and they arrange in certain way, that it will, the whole our kundalini shakti or energy rises towards, from our tailbone towards crown of the head. And that's what's happening with this arrangement of these syllables.
Got it. So would you say that pronouncing, sometimes I hear that it, you know, people say aum, like A-U-M instead of the O-M sound. Would aum be an incorrect pronunciation, or it doesn't matter compared to om?
The pronunciation should be om, but sometimes when you are, say, you are working with certain things, then you, if you are working with your inhalation or exhalation, then sound, it may sound om, but it's how you're using the breath. So, but the sound, when we are chatting like this, so then we are saying the sound om rather than om. Make sense?
Yes, totally makes sense. So going back to something you just mentioned about the placement of the sound, essentially from what I understood, this is like, I was reading about pranava pranayama recently, and you know, the oo sound came, you know, pretty soon. In another practice, the oo sound came later, the mer sound came sooner. Is that what you're referring to? Based on how we move the sounds around, that's when you can address certain conditions going on with the body and the mind?
Yes. So what happens that, so when you tune into what's happening with people's energy, so this is where I'm going to explain a little bit when I give mantra to people for certain conditions. So for example, if the person is suffering from, the mind is very active and they want to calm the mind down, so then in that case, the mantra is chanted in certain way. But if their mind is into the state of heaviness or tamasic or a little bit towards depression side, then you have to chant mantra in different ways. So that's where you will stretch certain sound in certain way, and you will say some things with, you know, so that's when that's what you're hearing in the pranayam, that, you know, you're stretching one sound or the other. So that's what's happening.
Got it. And so is listening to the sound of om the same as chanting om, or is there a big difference?
Listening, chanting, all good. You know, it is, when we listen, it is also, we are vibrating with the sound. You know, when we are chanting, we are vibrating with the sound. The most powerful way of the mantra practice is Manas Mantra, where your mind starts spontaneously chanting the mantra. But that will come with practice, you know, because the more you will listen, the more you will chant, then your system get, you know, acquainted with the mantra. And then a point come where your system, your mind just start chanting the mantra spontaneously. And that's considered the most powerful practice of the Japa mantra.
Wonderful. I am going to ask you a little about japa later. I don't want to go there right now. I have two more om questions for you. One is, how does om affect the mind?
As I said, it is a sound of our creation. And this sound of our creation, it's so natural for us that it starts bringing our, removes our blockages of our energy. It start clearing and getting rid of whatever is not serving us. It just has start happening spontaneously. And if you also, I'm going to talk a little bit about symbol of the om. You can even meditate on that. The symbol of om looks like number 3. And then there is a line coming out of from the center of the number 3. And then on that line, there is crescent moon shape, and then there is a dot on top of that. That's the symbol of om. And this symbol, okay, so let me explain how powerful or how amazing om is through what this symbol represents. It represents 3 states of our mind: conscious, subconscious, and unconscious mind. The first half part of the 3 is conscious, second half of the 3 is unconscious mind, and then the line coming out of the 3 in the middle is the subconscious mind. And then the half crescent moon you see on top of that line hanging, that is Maya. And then the dot on top of it's called the 4th. So let me explain all this. So the conscious, subconscious, and unconscious state of our mind is all because of the Maya, the illusion we have. For example, where we are born, which country we are born in, which family we are born in, forms our opinion of this world because we think that that's the reality. And so these are called sanskaras in Sanskrit. And these sanskaras create veils in front of our eyes. And we see reality through that. So what one person sees as a reality may not be reality for other person, you know. And so this is what is happening. And so this is the Maya, right? And we have to go beyond this. We have to go beyond the conscious, subconscious, unconscious mind. We have to lift the veils of Maya. And then we reach to the state which is called the 4th, which is not even given name or anything. It is called Turiya in Sanskrit. This Turiya is basically enlightenment, where when we let go of this, the veils of what we think reality is, we see the truth. The truth is the state. That state is called the 4th here, which is Turiya. And this is all in just that symbol of om, you know. And this is what just chanting just this mantra can take us to that state. So even if you can meditate on the symbol of om, you know, and even just looking at this symbol can give you your whole system that, you know, vibration of om. So it is a very powerful mantra. It is a very, the symbolism is so deep in it. So that the chanting, you can use it for meditation, you can use it for your asana practice, you can use it into your day-to-day life, but always, always make sure that you finish it with shanti, 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 3 times.
And thank you for that explanation. It's really helpful to break it down and talk about the symbol. I want to ask you one follow-up question. You spoke about using om in asana class. And so what is the role of om in a modern day yoga class? Is it just to, you know, is it just a way of starting our class together and chanting together? Is there anything yoga teachers need to remember when they're chanting om in a modern day asana class?
This question has been asked to me that, you know, is it okay to chant Om in the class, or is it okay to, are we being, I don't want to be disrespectful when I chant Om. Or another thing was, is it the cultural thing? So to answer this, my first thing is, if you are teaching yoga, it is cultural thing, you know, in a way, because
absolutely, yeah,
it is originated in India. But having said that, it is not defined as, you know, it is a property of India or anything like that. So when we are doing physical practice, we are doing just a tiny bit of yoga, like really, I mean, that's not true yoga. That is just a bit of yoga. So when we introduce our students with this, say, for example, Om, you can see how receptive they are. Like, I understand that if you are teaching certain group of people and if they are not open for it, then hold back. You don't have to. So I always ask my students permission. Is it okay if I chant Om? And I explain to them what it does. So I do it in the form of using it as a breathing practice on exhale. You can use it in asana, in a sense, like, again, you can use it doing the asana practice. Exhale, you can use it. It's a very therapeutic practice. You can. The purpose of these practices is to, so human beings is always, in when we are tense, we are into sympathetic mode. And these practices should take people to parasympathetic mode. So how to use it and how to give that benefit to your clients, if they are open for chanting Om, then I suggest do it. But if they are not open for it, then that's okay. Hold back. There is no time, no way. It's not really good for your clients to, you know, force this something down their throat, which they are not ready for. When they're ready, if they are open for receiving, then please share it with them, you know, because this is really, really beneficial for them.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice, because a lot of times people are either they understand it and they're ready, or sometimes students, they just need a little more time, and then slowly we can bring them to the sound of Om. So that's great advice. And I want to jump off to another topic here, Sunita, and I want to draw from your vast experience of studying Sanskrit. And so firstly, what should somebody know about Sanskrit language? Is it a dying language? Would you say that, because it's not so easily taught anymore?
Sanskrit, that's what people think, but that's not true. Sanskrit is very much alive. In fact, all the spiritual rituals in India are still performed in Sanskrit. There are pandits who dedicate their life to learn Sanskrit. And crazy people like me also jump into this. And it's just fascinating language. It is a language which has a very high regard in India. And that's why it is not used as a spoken language. So for colloquial language, there are many other languages which we can use. But Sanskrit is never brought down to that level. Sanskrit is always used on special occasion, and they are occasions in relation to the correcting or removing the blockages from our energy. Or you will also see that, you know, there also all the marriages, all the ceremonies in India, spiritual ceremony, which includes marriage as well, is still in Sanskrit. So you will see that so many things in India are still in Sanskrit. This is not dying language. It is a created language, which means that many thousand years ago, the sages, it was golden time of humanity. The sages spent a lot of time into meditation. And when they were in meditation, they heard the sounds of universe. And these discoveries, this tells us like when human being, when we turn inwards, we see so much truth. And they saw the truth of the universe, that there was sounds of universe. And then they string these sounds together, and then comes out the language, the most powerful language, which is Sanskrit. Sanskrit language is absolutely perfectly designed language. This language has a very specific rules. It is a mathematically accurate language, as well as it's very poetic. It appeals to our both hemispheres of the brain at once. It is really, really beautiful language. At the same time, almost all the mantras are mathematical equations. And they have also geometrical representation, which we call, sometimes it is called mandala or yantra. This is the beauty of Sanskrit language. Like, Sanskrit language is so powerful that the language itself, just the language, can take us to the enlightenment. And this is the language which is still alive. We can see that, you know, Ayurveda is still taught in Sanskrit in India. Then there is a lot of wisdom is still in Sanskrit. So if people really want to learn, they need to learn Sanskrit first to go deeper into the wisdom. Also, when they were looking language for AI, artificial intelligence, Sanskrit was fit the bill, because Sanskrit is a created language. It has clear rules of mathematics. So that it is not evolved language. And so that's why Sanskrit was able to fit the bill. And so it is very much alive, and it is very beautiful language. I think I'll stop now. Otherwise, I'll keep on going. I love this. So.
No, I was loving listening to it. The AI language, the mathematical precision. The reason why I brought up, is it a dying language, is because out here, I've actually heard of in a few trainings, you know, new teachers of yoga, they're actually taught that Sanskrit is a dying language. And I've always said that, no, it's not a dying language. It's just not something you hear often for certain reasons, which you highlighted. So I'm glad you clarified that. I want to talk to you about the pronunciations in Sanskrit language. So from what I remember, at least my teachers and my limited understanding of Sanskrit, my teachers would always be very particular about getting all the pronunciations correct. And they always would say, you should never pronounce it wrongly, because sometimes something bad may happen in it, you know. So how important is it to get the pronunciation in Sanskrit right? And is there anything untoward would happen if we don't pronounce it correctly?
Pronunciation is very important, because, as I said, that all the Sanskrit alphabets are bija mantras. So their arrangement is in the word form, or is, will basically work with our breath and our energy system, right? So when we working with, say, a mantra, and if the pronunciation is wrong, then we are not getting full benefit of that mantra. We may not get even any benefit of the mantra. It will just the words, you know. So that's why, and a little bit fearful or negative thing is, I think, Indian way of scaring students so that they will pronounce it right.
I think so too, yeah. Yeah.
But no, you go ahead.
No, I was just like, I had to ask you, because I remember so many teachers, you know, like insisting you get it right. Yeah. No,
that's a very Indian way of doing it. You know, you get it right, otherwise wrong thing will happen. And so we start chanting it right, because, oh my God, there will be wrong
things. Godness will happen, right? Yeah. Yeah. That makes me laugh. So can we talk about the word Sanskrit? And Can you explain to the listeners what is the original pronunciation of Sanskrit? Is it Sanskrit? Is it Sanskrit? Is it Sanskrit? What's the right way of pronouncing this?
So the word is Sanskrit. Sanskrit. And Sanskrit means perfectly created. In this perfectly created language is Sanskrit. That's what it is. And sometimes in English, we see Sanskrit. Sometimes you see Sanskrit. Sometimes you hear Sanskrit. But the actual pronunciation is Sanskrit.
Okay. I'm glad you clarified that, because from somewhere I heard that the Britishers ended up calling it Sanskrit, and then all of us started saying Sanskrit. So I'm glad you clarified that. I'm not sure if that story is 100% correct, but thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of change in the pronunciation, but so Sanskrita or Sanskrita, you know, you will hear this. So Sanskriti, Sanskrita is the right pronunciation.
Got it. Thank you. Are there any other words, Sunita, that we really mispronounce in modern day yoga?
I answered this in yoga's other...
With Kora, right? Yeah.
Podcast, yeah. Kora also. The word yoga itself is is the word yoga rather than yoga. But what happens when we write in English, this is almost like lost in translation, because when we write yoga in English, it becomes Y-O-G-A, you know, and so obviously people sound it yoga, but actual pronunciation is yoga, and then also asana instead of asana. So yes, there is a lot of that. But having said that, now I also started saying yoga, or, you know, sometimes
asana, yeah.
asana, because that's what people understand, and then slowly move towards yoga, because the word actually is wisdom of yoga is yoga vidya. So yoga is the correct pronunciation.
Got it. And especially for me, right, this is a side note, growing up in Karnataka and speaking Kannada, we add a lot of A at the end of many words. So it was yoga, pranayama, asana. It was always the A was there. So yeah, but I know the origin that you're talking about. So earlier you mentioned Om as a mantra. So can you explain what is a mantra, and how does mantra become meditation?
So you can use a mantra as a form of meditation, as a japa mantra. Japa means repetition. And repetition of the mantra helps our mind to calm down. Now, there are many mantras, so which one you will choose? Actually, I would suggest that way what you feel attracted towards, because like earlier days, you know, guru used to give the mantra. Now in modern world, it's a little bit difficult to find guru. So what we do is we turn inwards towards inner guru and listen to the sound, because mantra is all about sounds. Listen to the sounds and tune into what feels right, what resonates with your system. And choose that mantra. And then you can repeat the mantra. You can repeat the mantra 108 times if you have time. And there is a mala you can use for that. Mala is the rosary which you can use for chanting. It helps us to count. If you don't have that much time, you can do at least, you know, 3 times minimum. You can do 5 times, 7, 9, you can do that, or you can do 52 times, or you can do 108 times. So, sorry, 54 or 108 times. So, up to you how you use it. You can sit in simple cross-legged position or on the chair, center yourself, and repeat the mantra. Initially, you can say it out loud so that you let your system hear the mantra. Then you bring it closer, you whisper it, then you bring it even closer, you close your mouth and you chant it in your heart. And that's how you bring mantra into your whole system. These are very powerful practices, but in modern world, I have seen that people want immediate result. Like, I will start chanting mantra and I will get result today.
<Yeah.
laughs> It doesn't work like that. You will receive when you're ready. So just we have to do is practice, practice, practice.
Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between a mantra and a kirtan?
So meditation, when we use mantra for meditation, we sit quietly and we try to do it. We turn our awareness inwards and we chant it in our heart. So that's the, and we repeat it in our mind. That's the way of meditation. With mantra, the mantras can be used as a form of bhakti yoga, which is where you sing the mantra with your family and your friends. It is very joyous experience. And in the kirtan, it is call and recall. Usually a singer will sing the mantra. And usually these mantras are very simple so that they can, simple in a sense, like easy to pronounce, so that call and recall can happen. They are not simple in their energy form. I'm saying simple in the sense like they usually are easier to pronounce kind of mantras. And also you can sing these mantras, you know. So it's easier to sing these mantras. So these mantras are chosen to in the form of a song, and then call and recall happens. So the singer, the main singer, will sing the mantra and everyone else will follow. And it is very joyous. It is very joyous experience when it is done correctly. It's very heartwarming experience. It's beautiful, a devotional experience. So that's the difference between the one is meditation. When you use the mantra, you sit quietly, that's the meditation. And singing the mantra in the form of kirtan is a form of bhakti yoga.
Got it. And so if a beginner were to start, would they start with mantra first, or is it easier for them to start with kirtan?
It depends on the person. Like if they have... Depends on where and how the exposure is, like having kirtan option available in their community, then I would suggest go and enjoy it. And also, you know, there are now a lot of online nice kirtan available, so they can experience that online as well. And then using it in your own practice, because the main beauty of the mantra is you can use them for meditation. And using them for meditation is the very powerful experience, you know. And where to start? They can start with listening to the sounds of the mantra and what resonates with them, what feels right for their system, you know. Talk with your yoga teachers, see if they can suggest some mantras. It's really, I mean, if you are curious on the path of yoga, it is believed that means you are ready. If you are listening to this podcast, that means you are ready. So if you are ready, then be curious about it. Find ways. And the more curious you are, the more doors it will open for you. So you will find your own path, I would suggest, you know, be curious, find what is available there. And there are a lot of online things available there as well. I have put two courses together. One is the introduction to Sanskrit, and then other is on the mantras. So that is also an option if people are interested to look into that. I talk a lot more about in detail about the mantras as well as more about Sanskrit, its origin and stuff like that.
Wonderful. I'll make sure to link to both these courses that you have. And I feel like, Sunita, there are 10 more questions I want to ask you, but I'm going to save it for another time when hopefully you will come back to this podcast to talk about a lot more of Ayurveda, a lot more Sanskrit. There's just so much, I feel, that wisdom that you have. And I thank you for sharing it with us today.
Before
I let you go, where can listeners find you, reach out to you? Is there a website, some social media where they can find you?
Yes, my website is www.sunitayoga.com. And the courses I mentioned is under the shop. I'll give you a link for that. And on social media, my social media is Sunita. Instagram is Sunita P. And also my Facebook page is Sunita Yoga and Meditation. And I'm not very active on social media. I try to be, but...
good for you. Really good for you.
New.
It takes too much time.
So I post whenever I can. But if you scroll down, like on my Sunita Yoga and Meditation there, if you go to the video section, there is 21 days of meditation on love and compassion there. You will see a lot of like recipes and things like that I post once in a while on Ayurveda. But again, I'm not serial poster. You'll find it once in a while.
I love that serial poster. That is wonderful. Thank you so much, Sunita. I'm so glad you were able to do this. And I hope we'll be in touch. Take care.
Thank you very much, Arundhati. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in. As always, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. I'll see you next week. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.